Welcome everybody to episode 27 of Ours is the Fury. Yeah, Ryan is counting, and yes, it is 27. It also happens to be the last podcast where we're going to be discussing a game, because it was the last game the Ottawa Fury played in the NASL against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. It was 1-1. Not the last game ever, Ryan. Oh. I mean the last game of this year. And I'm back. And, you know, judging from the big outcry from the listeners last week, they really missed me.
Oh, that's my Twitter handle. That was me.
Yeah, actually, no one seemed to mind. So, yeah, I'm back anyway. So, screw you! And who? Kendra's also here.
I'm here still, always.
Blocksmith.
Hi, peeps.
And, of course, Ryan, who is... mostly memeing today.
Yes.
Not so much speaking.
Miming.
Yeah. Miming.
Miming.
Yes.
Miming. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a draw. A 10-man draw.
10-man.
Yeah, but the Fury, they played really well. So to give the listeners a bit of an idea what it was like, it was a cold night in Florida.
14 degrees Celsius.
How many people died of frostbite?
What? A lot of cases of hypothermia and...
Oh, they showed a picture of the Fort Lauderdale bench, and all of them are just wrapped up. Like, they're in the woods in the middle of the snow.
Wearing toques.
Yes.
I think it was like 53 Fahrenheit, I think it was. So.
Yeah, it was an important game for the Strikers, because depending on the other game between Carolina and Minnesota, it wasn't?
Yeah, no, it depended on it. Just, Carolina drew I was just hoping Carolina won, because it'd be hilarious to see Carolina in the playoffs, because they've done so poorly in the fall season.
Yeah, basically if Carolina had won and the Fort Lauderdale Strikers would have lost, then the Strikers would have been out of the playoffs, and it kind of looked like that might happen for a while there.
Until the card.
We'll get to that.
The card.
Yeah, and there were 5,505 people.
No, there weren't.
That's
they
the official
look,
number.
That's, I guess.
On the field before the game?
Yeah, it was cold night in Florida.
So, yeah.
People left.
I really
Which
enjoyed...
suited our team just fine, because it's always cold in Ottawa.
Yeah, they referred to Ottawa as frozen tundra at one point.
Frozen tundra? Who's that?
Tundra. Yeah, I really enjoyed the sped up version of O Canada.
Yeah, I when they played it, I was like, which anthem is this?
They could see some of the players like smirking and stuff. That was pretty funny. Yeah, it's like double speed. And just like our gameplay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought we played very well in the first half.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I had controlled the ball a lot. I had some chances early.
Before we get to that, though, we should mention that our lineup was very different from usual. So, first of all, Pizer in net. But then we had Woodbine, Soria on the central left, and then Becky and Richter. And I was really surprised that Trafford didn't start. I don't know, what did you guys think about that?
Yeah, I was pretty shocked that since he's played every single minute of the season, that they would leave him out for the last game.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the thinking was behind that. Maybe to sort of reward Soria for having such a stellar season, because his position was sort of stolen by Woodbine, who's such a great player, and just sort of giving him the signal, you know, you're still important to the team and you can play as central back as well, and then sort of sacrificing Trafford for this and also giving Trafford a break.
I guess. But if I were, I don't know, if I was in that position, I'd want like a full season of like, I played every minute.
Well, he did play every game because he did come on later on.
But I don't know.
We're very sentimental. Like, mm-hmm. we're like, oh, if there's one guy, he's played every minute for our club and now he hasn't. And, but really, like when it comes down to it, does it really matter? And like, it's like the coach is going to do what's best for the team. And I think to have a look at some of these players, and you know, to put Estiquio there and put Soria in the center back position, which he played a totally different style of game. He broke up so many plays down the middle. It was.
And Eustiquio also had a great match. Who was of course playing because Richie Ryan was out with a red card that he got in the last game. Up until the point that we'll get to. And then Patterson and Donatelli also played. So no Ubi. And then we basically had our dream three in the front, right? Like, this is what we like to see. Mm-hmm. Oliver on the left, Dantas in the, as our striker, and then Haworth on the right.
Yeah, it's what we've been, well, it's what Blogsmith, I think, has been calling for most of the fall season.
Yeah, it seems to be the forward pairings that seem to play better, from my point of view, anyway.
And I noticed Gorick wasn't in the squad. Do you guys know why, or?
Wasn't in the squad? No, he wasn't in the lineup.
He wasn't a sub either. He was just not.
DBE was on the bench.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's an interesting change. We'll keep an eye on that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do another show before the end for the cup game. So we'll keep everyone up to date on that.
Yeah. So yeah, the Fury had nothing to play for except honor, but they played really like relaxed. They did what they knew how to do, and looked pretty impressive. Whereas the strikers looked nervous and they were under pressure and they were all, like, they all knew that they can make the playoffs today and just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, like...
Overconfident, maybe?
No, they
played very tentative.
Yeah.
Like, all the pressure was on them, and there's absolutely no pressure on the Fury, and it played out like that in the first half.
Yeah. So, yeah, Patterson scored. Do you want to break down the goal for us?
Yeah, it was some consistent pressure by the Fury around the striker's box, and just kind of a not spectacular pass from Donatello just kind of found Patterson at the top of the box. He just coolly put it past the keeper. Nice goal from Patterson.
It was a really nice goal. I was really impressed and shocked, when that goal went in. I wasn't expecting it.
It's kind of funny how the commentators called him the most consistent player of the Fury this year.
The commentators said a lot of things last night.
I think they just read like a press kit. Like, and they have they have a little bit of an idea. I think we were chatting during the game last night, like all of us. And one of the things we said is, like, those commentators know as much about the Ottawa Fury as we know about the Atlanta Silverbacks, Like,
yeah, but the difference is, they're getting paid for this and it's their jobs. And for us, it's like a labor of love.
That's true.
So, right. And they seem to just make up stuff. Like,
yeah, you can't hold them to the same standards as a bunch of fans like we are. And the Ottawa could have been leading higher at halftime. They generated lots of chances, and it was a very entertaining game, really.
Yeah, Dantas had a couple chances, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would have been nice to like have a blowout right at the end.
Is there anything else we should mention besides that for the first half?
I don't. I don't think so. The strikers seem to be trying the same thing. Constantly down the left side. They go right at Richter.
Yeah.
Like, they tried a couple other things, but most of the time it's down the left side, tried to cross it. They go almost to the corner and try to cross it. And they have the speedy guy, I can't remember his name, the forward.
Pekka?
Yeah, he was just flying down there, and he'd outrun Richter.
Yeah.
And then he'd try to cross it, and it'd never work out for them.
Yeah, they also had a string of just awful chances on that. And it wasn't even just the first half, the second half as well, where a player would get the ball in kind of a shooting position and put it way wide or way high. And just, like, just trying to do too much.
I think, like, overall, through the whole game, like, all of our defenders were super, super solid, and that was partly because I really like Woodbine as a defender, and also Soria in the middle played really, really, really well. Like Ryan said, he broke up a lot of stuff and played differently than he plays on the edge. So I don't know. I think that's a really good position for him to be in, like more in the center back role. Kind of saved. Well, there was a couple of good chances by the strikers in the first half, and that kind of saved us. But yeah.
So you'd rather see Soria and Trafford, or Soria and Becky play than Becky and Trafford as a center back player?
Yeah, I think Soria was like a really good addition in the center back. I don't know, like, in place of who, but I liked it. He played really well.
I don't think it's an either or. Like, have Trafford, Becky, and Soria, like, playing center back roles, right? Like, in switching those guys out, giving them all minutes. I doubt we'll see that next year. Highly doubt it, but it'd be nice to see.
I think I'd prefer Becky on a right back than being in center. He plays center very well, but I think I prefer him on the right back. And it'd be interesting to see next year if Richter sticks around or goes back to Toronto if they throw Becky on that right side.
Okay, so he's on loan from Toronto, but do we know how long? Like, is it just the fall season, or was it...
I'm pretty sure he's going back to TFC.
Okay.
And then we'll see what happens. Like, they might not want to keep him on, so I think it's unclear at this point.
Okay.
I'm sure they'd love to have him back. I'd love to have him back.
It would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he has more. He has the options, right? Like, there's USL Pro, there's TFC, or another MLS club if TFC releases him. I think he has the option more than we do.
Yeah, so in the second half, Ottawa kept dominating, playing well. You know, we were close to scoring a second. And then Mauro... if you pronounce this correctly. Ustakia. Ustakia. Like, he was just... did this over-motivated, completely nutso challenge, like, in midfield that was totally unnecessary. Studs up. Actually hit the knee of his opposing player, who I believe was Pekka. And, you know, it was a straight red, no questions asked. The striker's player was injured, had to leave the game. And it was just so frustrating because it was so unnecessary. You know, everything was going so well. Like, what was he thinking?
I think he was just kind of, like, overconfident. Like, you know, he started the game, he's in the game, he's playing well, and he's kind of like, you know what, I got this, guys. And just, I think it was just kind of like... rookie mistake.
Yeah, it's inexperience.
Yeah.
I don't think he was trying to, like, hurt him. I think he actually was just a bad challenge. Like, he was way, way slow on that one. And it's unfortunate. It came at a bad time. We were dominating the game up to that point.
Yeah.
But you can't put it all on his shoulders. Like, we could have come out with a better result, but...
Well, I mean, he's highly to blame for it, in my view, because Fury had to switch tactics. We were 10 men, so now all of a sudden, instead of continuing to play an attacking game, we're defending. You know, we're not launching many attacks anymore at all because, you know, the strikers are launching waves after waves of attacks, and it really hurt us. And it came so early, like, what was it, the 54th minute? So that's, you know, most of the second half with the man down, so...
But at the same time, I don't think they looked, like, panicky. And I don't think they, like, they really... I felt that they looked confident. I mean, not confident, because obviously you're down a player. But, I mean, it looked like they could handle it. And, I mean, it would have been nicer if we could have, you know, attacked and gotten some more, like, another goal and won the game. That would have been great. But I think, considering the circumstances, they played quite solidly with 10 men and didn't kind of, you know... get panicky or disorganized or start flailing around. It was pretty, like, solidly played, I thought.
Yeah, they defended really well. But, like, I can't think of a single chance we had after that. There was nothing that we could throw at them.
No, it's interesting that this happens in the last fall game, when the first fall game in Edmonton, that was the game that Richter got his second yellow early in the second of a game. They were at that point dominating, and it just really cost them the game.
Yeah, cards have been our been a sore spot for us all season. I think they probably lost us 6 points. They might have lost us the playoffs. You know, it's, if we didn't get those cards, it's the three times that we can think of off the top of our heads. We're getting cards early in games, like early second half.
And things flared up there a little bit. There was a bit of a brawl, right? What caused that brawl? I'm trying to remember.
Woodbine was, I don't know, I don't think he did anything. He just kind of like was around a player and then...
Sort of pushed him out of bounds.
Yeah, and then one of their subs, the Fort Lauderdale striker subs, decided
backup keeper.
It was his duty to fight for their honor, I guess.
I haven't seen it too often, a sub getting a card.
Yeah. Well, it does happen. I mean, I don't understand, I saw some stuff on social media, people are like, oh my god, a substitute got a yellow card. I mean, obviously, substitutes can get yellow cards, because if that rule wasn't in place, then you could do whatever the fuck you wanted as a substitute,
but
right?
But if a sub gets a second yellow card, it doesn't affect the team on the field at all.
No, but you couldn't, you know, bring that player on.
But. Right. But, okay, what if that sub came in, he'd be coming in with a yellow card, though?
Yeah.
And then that would affect.
Yeah.
Wow. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then the strikers did manage to score in the 86th minute. Was it from a corner or was it...
No, it was an open play.
Open play.
Yeah, striker, player, don't know
Hassan.
Who was, headed it back to Hassan, who, yeah, brought it down very well, turned around and kicked it in the corner.
Yeah, he basically... It was a beautiful goal.
And wasn't he the sub for the injured Pekka?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't want to put salt in that.
So the Austrian strikers coach did everything right.
Yes, yes.
Put it on the right player. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying it was disappointing to concede, but you could kind of tell at that point that it was going to come. There was just so much pressure on the Fury at that time.
And I think the only reason that the strikers sort of didn't go for another goal was because they knew the Carolina Minnesota United game was pretty much done. Like Carolina, I think at that point had to score like 4 goals to be back in playoff contention or something like that. So the strikers knew they didn't have to win. And plus, I think a draw would have been enough for them anyway, right? Like, regardless what happened in the Carolina game.
Yeah, a draw would have been enough. What about the celebration after they scored? It's like they won the World Cup or something.
Well, you know, it's pretty remarkable that the strikers are in the playoffs given their season. I mean, they're not a great team. And they've had some really crappy, what is that called? Like, when they're not on form?
They've had a bad run.
It's bad stretches, bad runs.
But look who's fighting for that fourth spot. You know, it was Carolina and Fort Lauderdale, and Edmonton was in the mix there last week. I guess it's a 10-team league, so that's bound to happen. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see who actually comes out with the trophy.
I mean,
the Strikers go play Minnesota. Minnesota's been doing horribly. I think they've lost 3 in a row.
But I don't think that they're horrible. I think they're just taking it easy. They got to be like, we should probably talk about this in another segment, but
I don't know, Minnesota, it's like they're not the type of team to do that though, like to take their foot off the gas and especially losing to Indy. And
so we can say that, you know, San Antonio Scorpions won the fall championship,
which gets them into the playoffs they were already in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's something. Yeah, it's a trophy for the fans. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about some more.
Welcome back, guys. Hope you enjoyed the music, as always.
Maliciously, like, hope you enjoyed the music.
Because we do have this thing where, like, the music just, you know, comes right into your ear. It's like any music. So a listener tweeted a question in for us. It's at Pat Boudry, and he wants to know who is signed already for next year, other than Heinemann or Richie Ryan and Vinny Dantes. First of all, we should point out Dantes is not 100% signed. We haven't heard anything about that, right?
No. As far as we know, Heinemann, Ryan signed for next year and a year after. Heinemann signed for next year. Patterson signed for next year. Pizer signed for next year.
Trafford.
And that's it.
And then apparently Mark Dos Santos was saying that we should see around 8 or 9 new players next year, right?
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot of new players.
But they're also expanding the rosters to 35 players, so no one's leaving.
Are they?
No, I'm just kidding, guys.
I hope some are leaving.
No, but the roster size is 24, right? We're sitting at 21?
22, I guess, if you count Richter.
Okay.
Well, we know that, you know, we're going to go into next season with 3 keepers. There's no point in going into the season with 4. Other than that, I mean, I'm not sure who's going to leave.
This might be a little premature. Touchy here.
Oh, okay.
But I think either Ubi or Donatelli will not be back next year.
What is so? Making you say that? So. Why are you breaking our heart?
What do you know? Who do you know?
Could you just hear my heart at that point?
I just think the midfield's kind of, in the last few weeks, has just been kind of poor. And I think they just kind of need some more pace. And it's, yeah, unfortunately.
Because they're similar player types? You think one of them's got to go?
Yeah, I think with Ryan, Donatelli, and Ubi, that they're not really quick. They're very good on the ball, but they're very similar types of players, unfortunately.
What's your bet on who would not come back? Oh, yeah.
No. Don't do it because you're going to be wrong. No, and then everyone's going to be like, what an idiot.
Sorry.
If it was right now, I'd probably lean towards Ubi, but I thought Ubi probably had a better season than Donatelli, so who knows. I'd love to see them both back, but just my gut feeling says one of them's gone.
Yeah, last night the announcers, they spoke about Ubi Perapovic being one of the league's brightest players, like one of the star players of the league. Like, I've heard from other teams, like he's played in Minnesota briefly, and I've either heard really good things about Ubi Perapovic or really negative things. Like, it's kind of guy, I think he's like that.
He polarizes, yeah.
Yeah, people love him or hate him. And
well, we pretty much all like him.
I think we all love him. It's,
I mean, there's definitely a downturn. He's definitely one of our brightest, most dynamic players in the spring season and even in the first half of the fall, but there's just been, like, a huge downturn for him in the last few weeks or so. I don't know if that's just because he's not used to playing a full season, and he basically played a full season here. Like, he played a lot, and he's not young anymore.
He's younger than I am, but yeah, he really stood out at the start of the season, the preseason games, the game in Rochester. I think him and Donatelli were the ones that stood out the most, and yeah. So it's interesting how things change. And the team will change. Hopefully, we won't have too much turnover, but there'll be new faces next year for sure. I'd like to see some younger guys, like on moving up in their development, kind of guys.
I agree with you that I'd like to see some younger guys, but at the same time, also like one or two like super experienced guys. You know that.
Yeah. At the same time, you'd like a trophy or two.
No, but like I don't necessarily mean like an old star or whatever, but like a player that knows the NASL well, like one that already has won a trophy or two, or like
has some experience. You know, pick up a player from San Antonio. Pick up.
Yeah, let's get Adrian Can from Minnesota. He
can make us pizzas. There's a great video of Adrian Can on YouTube burning pizza.
Who, you know, he scored the decisive winner for San Antonio, giving them the fall championship. So it'd be nice to have him on board, you know.
Plus, he's Canadian.
Exactly.
And a former model.
Yeah, I actually, you know, to be honest, I find his Twitter profile pic. It's like an old Twitter account that he doesn't use, but it's slightly creepy looking. But yeah.
Yeah, it's something we've been saying, right? That we should try to get experienced players from other teams that know the league and not necessarily 36-year-old players. But.
And then another thing I wanted to say was I just wish we weren't so predictable. Like, we always play this 4-3-3, and, like, the opponents know exactly how they need to play against us. And then, like you mentioned earlier, we really don't have a lot of quick players in the midfield. So, you know, it's... I'm hoping that we can be more flexible.
I think that is just the product of this is the first year and Mark DeSantos like kind of setting the standard and saying, okay, this is the formation that I want to play consistently. And maybe next year it will be more flexible. But I think this year it was like a good solid, like, this is how we're playing each week. Because like you've got all these players playing together and we don't have chemistry yet. So like that takes one thing out of the equation. You know exactly how you're going to play. So maybe next year that will change a little bit. But I think this year, just like to get that foundation, I think that was a good thing.
Yeah, makes sense. Like the formation was sort of our anchor, like the one thing that's for certain. And then everything was like around the formation.
Even the stadium changed.
Yeah, I know.
That's true.
Yeah. And the weather. It got so cold. And then warm. And then cold again.
And now we're in a frozen tundra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not advocating like a huge formation change, but I think it'd be better if the wingers played a little more inside. I don't think this year that the wingers taking it wide and crossing it in was very effective, if not effective.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, Heinemann's not that player. Dantas is definitely not that player to win balls in the air, and we weren't very effective at crossing. I think Oliver, Hayworth, Maillard are a lot better kind of cutting in, playing more inside, having Heinemann or Dantas kind of control the ball in the middle and passing it off to a more inside player to create chances, and it is to take it wide out.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, things weren't too bad. Like, what I'm really happy about this season, this isn't our giant season review podcast, which we have planned and have been working on very hardly. Wink, wink. Yeah, that we never got blown apart. Now, what was our biggest loss?
It's probably in Carolina when we changed to a 4-4-2. And we never did that again.
Yeah. We did what you wanted. And see what happened.
But what was the result there?
Was it 3-0?
3-0?
Yeah.
So like,
I don't think we've ever lost more than by 3 goals.
No. Yeah, which is, you know, not too bad, considering we're a brand new team. And
yeah. Most of our losses were 1-goal losses.
Yeah.
Like, so.
A lot of last-minute goals.
Yeah, a lot of conceding late. A lot of scoring late, too, though. We're just, like, being late.
Yeah, a couple of refereeing decisions, if they had gone differently, you know, we would have been in contention for the playoffs until the very end. Oh, and another thing, I wish we had a player that was, like, really good at, like, free kicks. Like, because the last home game I saw, not the indie game, but the one before that...
Edmonton.
Yeah, against Edmonton, we had so many free kicks, and they were all so horribly taken. It was just so frustrating. I do have to admit, Richie Ryan scored a very nice free kick goal. But he's not someone who does it regularly. That was probably a bit of a fluke. It was a beautiful goal, but he's not someone who can do that week in and week out. And I'm hoping to have someone that... I like teams that have like the one guy that takes all the corners, all the free kicks, and you always know that he's going to create some danger. Yeah. Someone like that would be nice.
Yeah, it was like penalties this year as well. Had trouble scoring penalties.
At the start
of the season. Kept... Here, you take it. Oh, you missed? Okay, well, get someone else to take it. I'll get someone else to take it.
Yeah, yeah. Oliver attempted the first ever Ottawa Fury penalty and then didn't score. I remember that well in Carleton. And I think the first penalty scored from the Fury was by Heinemann.
No. It was Donatelli.
What? It was Donatelli.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what.
Where? I can't remember when.
Namu, if you're listening,
I believe it was spring. And then Donatelli came up and again to take a penalty. He missed it, and then that was the end of him.
So it's like scoring your in?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was funny that before the season started, we're saying that set pieces are kind of their weakness. Mm-hmm. And it kind of turned out that way. It was more offensive weakness than defensive weakness, but something to build on next year.
Yeah. So, anyone know when things start back up again? I don't mean the NASL season, but just. You know, when does training begin again? How long of a break do these players get?
I believe they start March, like first week of March, so it's pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
And I know Dos Santos said he's not going to have much time off at all. He's going to be looking for players right away. I actually overheard him say in a conversation that I was involved in briefly, and he was just saying, yeah, I got 1-2 weeks off, and then I'm looking for players and getting new players.
Everybody must be pretty burned out in the organization, eh? Like, first ever season. It was a long season, especially the fall season. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, it's a lot of stress getting everything kind of, like, running smoothly, and because they've never done this before, so it's kind of like navigating new waters. So, yeah, it could be, you know.
Moving homes.
Yeah.
That transition was probably pretty tough on them.
Moving from some beautiful, warm, tropical climate to the frozen tundra of Ottawa.
Yeah, and the travel problems they've had.
Oh, yeah. Like
they always get stuck in Washington, D.C. for some reason, even if they're not traveling in the direction of Washington, D.C.
They're going to Edmonton. Why are we stuck in Washington? How does this happen?
Probably it was a cheaper flight because Air Canada is so freaking expensive.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, last year, I believe it was about a year ago that we signed Patterson. It was definitely before the Soccer Bowl last year. We signed Patterson. So at the end of the season, I mean, we could start signing guys right off the bat.
And there's no expansion draft in the NASL, right? Like, we're not going to lose any players to Jacksonville.
No, we might gain some Atlanta players, but who knows what's happening there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Hopefully they'll have say something by the time of the Soccer Bowl.
So that's so disappointing. So that we're going to have exactly 10 teams again next year, right? Atlanta leaving, basically, and then Jacksonville joining.
It depends how quick they can set up shop if they are moving to another city. They might just change owners and stay in Atlanta, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, it's not a done deal, but we hope they stay.
I'm going to be honest, like, I'm quite pessimistic about NASL at the moment. Like, it's just, like, it's my first season where I've closely followed the league. And it's just, they're so off the map in comparison, you know, what MLS does and USL Pro does. Like, I know the commissioner is always so positive and I like listening to him. And there's some great clubs and some great organizations in the league. But where's the money? Nobody's making any money, and there's such better alternatives,
yeah,
for potential owners.
I think there's a way to do it and just appear more professional, like just a little, you know, just the broadcast, just a little more professional. You don't have to spend more money. You just gotta like have people that are more into it, like that actually care about the league and the team. And I think they need to do more to promote the league. Very little, like nobody in the city is talking about the league. They talk about the team, and they don't talk about the competition. Once this season, I saw on the billboard the league's leading scorers or a table on the scoreboard. Like build interest in the league, and try to build the league as a product instead of just putting 10 or 12 teams out there, like with these little budgets. You know, like use your collective marketing. And build the league up and make it better.
Yeah, it doesn't help that between the NASL, the MLS, and USL Pro, that basically the US and Canada are basically a giant risk board. They're all just trying to consolidate their teams into each market. And yeah, I think as soon as MLS kind of settles down and not expanding, then the NASL will have a lot better chance to get teams in markets that deserve NASL and can support the NASL. But now there's a ton of teams that just want MLS. We don't care about anything else. So as soon as those teams can't get into MLS, there'll probably be a better market for expansion into the NASL.
Fair enough. Do you think, is Minnesota for sure going into MLS, or is that a rumor?
Well, it's a very strong rumor, but
it's not official.
It's not official, but it's tied. There's two potential ownership groups. One's the NFL, the Vikings, and one is the current Minnesota United group. So see what happens there, but it's just, they can just do so much more. Like, I just feel like the Fury, they just market to just Ottawa. They don't try to market to the rest of Canada. And when other teams, professional teams set up in this country, they market it to the whole country, not just like their neighborhood.
Yeah.
10 kilometers in every direction. They actually market it to the whole country. And Ottawa being the capital, being bilingual, with huge potential there to connect with a lot of people.
They may not have the marketing dollars for that at this point.
No, but you just work outside of Ottawa just a little bit, like just a little bit of advertising, or just have players go to places in surrounding towns, not just as far as Canada.
So I also just wanted to stress that while I'm pessimistic about the NASL, I still much prefer the NASL over the MLS. Like, I really can't stand what the MLS does, and like the way they treat Canadian teams and players and so on. But unfortunately, that's where the money is right now. But it would be like, there's so much potential for growth for the NASL, because there's so many football purists, and like a lot of people, you know, want to see soccer in North America the way that the NASL, you know, attempts to do it, but it's just so imperfect at the time.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a big year. I mean, MLS coming into labor negotiations. I mean, it's a distinct possibility that the MLS players strike before the start of next year. So if that happens, NASL gets a huge boost.
And MLS, to be fair, it's not the healthiest league in the world. Like, it's, they have some big clubs and they do the whole revenue sharing thing, and but they, you know, Chivas did contract this year, and it's the third team in this league's history. You know, imagine if the NFL had a team contract, or the NHL, or the NBA, it'd be a huge deal. And they're kind of getting away with it. Like, no one's holding, going, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, but in the Chivas case, it's just so hilariously poorly thought out concept, that team, and their PR was just so bad that you can't really fault the league for it, because it's...
But they're doing it again with New York and Man City. Like, they're, oh, let's connect this team to another team. And I'm like a Man United fan living in New York. Well, screw Man City and screw NYC. I mean, it's just, it's not smart. Like, you're taking out a lot of people by connecting yourself to a club like that, to a foreign club. That.
Yeah, it just seems the MLS is kind of depending on expansion fees. And eventually those are going to run out, because you can't have a 35-team league.
Yeah, the pyramid
scheme.
It's
an odd number.
Everyone plays one game. I can't say one else. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Let's see. If NASL can do a promotion relegation with NPSL or another league, that'd be interesting.
And let's not forget, like, I don't want to get into this right now because we love this and we could talk about this for hours, but Division 1A, the Canadian NASL division, if that would ever become a reality, that would be awesome.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have an away team that I can go see the Fury play at.
Yes, it'd be nice to drive to Rochester, drive to Quebec City,
or Hamilton.
We're gonna have to make New York work at some point. Like, next year, hopefully it'll be like in the September, you know, in the fall. Like, a beautiful day to go to New York. What?
Yeah,
you guys don't have fantasies of going on the Sex and the City tour? I'm just kidding.
I just want to see Jersey. The Sopranos tour.
Yeah. And that's our closest team right now. I think Indianapolis is the closest the other way, so. Yeah, it'd be nice to have some closer rivals.
Yeah, no one really wants to take that Edmonton road trip.
That's really far.
Done it a couple really times. Mm.
5 days later.
Yeah.
On that note, let's conclude this thing. Thanks for listening, guys. We can be reached on Twitter at Ottawa Fury. We're probably going to have an email address soon.
Woo!
Yeah.
Where do you get one of those?
I don't know. There's these providers out there. It's really complicated, but I'm reading this help document right now. And yeah, I think...
we're setting up Eudora.
Yes, you know, you can follow us on Twitter soon. We'll have an email for, you know, where we can be reached, so people that don't use Twitter can also get in touch with us.
Yeah, there won't be a show next week, but we're planning, as we said before, a year-end show in a couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And there's we have like a sister or brother podcast, the Bleed Red Blacks podcast. They're having a party down at the Georgetown, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. November 7th.
November 7th. I think it's like 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
The meeting down there. So if you're a Red Blacks fan and a Fury fan and you like podcasts.
Perfect party for you.
Yeah, come down to this party at Georgetown November 7th. And then most of us will be there. Yeah. And all the Bleed Red Blacks guys will be there. So.
And also, I just want to make a promise. Next season, we're going to be so much more professional.
Oh, yeah. We're renting a studio.
And it'll also be a house and has a kitchen and a bedroom in the studio. And no studio equipment.
Yeah. But and we'd really like to hear like from people. Any ideas you have, things you want to hear about. We do have a lot of... We'd like to thank the Fury. We've had really good access to the team this year. So if there's like certain players you want to hear from or questions you want us to ask... those players or the team management, please let us know, and like we have the access, and we'll get those questions asked.
And I also just want to thank the Fury organization, because I have done a lot of work with Stony Monday Riot and used the audio for this podcast, and I just really wanted to thank all the players and the organization for allowing me to talk with them and just for being really awesome at answering my questions. So thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, we did have some great guests on the show, and also the ones that Kendra interviewed. I mean, we had Santa, so thanks to the coach as well. We had
Nash.
We didn't have Dos Santos' brother, but that's because we didn't reach out and ask.
We didn't have Nash's brother either.
Yeah, because we're not a basketball podcast, right? And we had Chris Hoffley, which was you know, a friend of the show.
Yeah, and Teo.
Yeah, but and Baggy.
Yeah.
Matt.
Mr. Hawkins.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who's doing his PhD in supporters culture. Impressive work. Yeah, we had a great season, for sure. And thanks to everybody who's listening and who came on and is supporting us. And check out our season finale special.
Two-hour special.
Spectacular! 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, we'll... We'll be asking your feedback for questions, I'm sure. And yeah, just thanks for listening and thanks for participating.
Toodles.
Bye.
Stole my stuff. Once they fall, you'll sail only to soar. Waiting in the dark won't help anyone. Waiting for a moment that will never come. Make your move while there's still time.
So the announces were particularly entertaining at the Fort Lauderdale match, eh?
Oh. They started off with Pays Air. And it ended up... What did it end up?
Pessier.
And Pistachio going down the wing.
Oh, yeah, that also turned into...
Ustachio.
Ustachio. And Stachio or something like
that. Pistachio.
And then one of the announcers' wife ran into a player who happened to be from Tampa. Well, he was in Tampa. Isn't that remarkable?
And he wasn't in town last week, by the way. Everyone, he wasn't in town last week.
He's doing political work.
He wasn't in town last week.